Hi, I'm Brian Cohen.
And I'm H. Claire Taylor. Have you struggled to keep up with the fast-changing world of self-publishing?
Do you want to learn the latest news, tips, and tactics to help you sell more books now and into the future?
Welcome to the Sell More Books Show, a weekly podcast that gives you all the info you need to know in under an hour.
To save you time, give you motivation, and boost your publishing profit.
Enough waffling. Let's get started.
Okay, Claire, on with the show.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to another episode of the Sell More Books Show. This is episode 342. I'm your host, H. Claire Taylor, and joining me today is author Trixie Silvertail of the Mitzi Moon Mysteries series. Hi, Trixie.
Hi, Claire. Thanks for having me. This is awesome.
Well, thanks for filling in, Brian. You'll be joining us in spirit in a little bit, but for now, it's going to be yet another all-female episode, so strap in, folks. So I do want to start off by just saying, you know, Trixie and I recently worked together on Paranormal Cozy Mystery Anthology. It went really well. What do you think, Trixie?
It really did. I cannot say enough good things about how well it went. And I have to say, I was admittedly shocked because I had heard more than my share of horror stories. And I was really kind of concerned going into it, like, woo, can I, you know, steer this thing or is it going to Titanic on me halfway through? But it went so well. Really great authors. Everyone met deadlines. Everyone took part. I was so happy. I mean, it makes me want to do another one, which is weird because most people are like, I'm never doing another anthology, you know?
Right. We have covered some anthology nightmare stories on the show before. But I feel like we have learned from other people's mistakes. We got contracts in right away. It was not like a handshake anthology, right?
Yeah. Like, hey, let's write an anthology. Wink, wink.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And I would say that the thing that I think we did that made the most difference was early on, we asked ourselves what our goals were with it. Cause there's so many different goals that you can have.
True.
For an anthology, right? So, you know, ours was, we want to basically cross-pollinate. That was a big one, you know, get new authors in, some authors who are less known or who haven't participated in anthologies. And I think that's worked really well. What would you say was probably like the best move that you and I made?
I have to agree that getting contracts in place and getting people to agree to, you know, here's what we're doing, here's why we're doing it, here's what's expected of you, you know, kind of thing. I think setting up the expectations early on was a great idea. And I think that we had a good way of building team. And I think that did make a difference in the long term, to make people feel involved, to keep people informed about what stage we were at, what the next deadline was, you know, and just kind of keep that communication open so that people felt like they were part of a project versus, hey, turn in your story, hit the road, you know?
Right. I have been a part of anthologies before, and it was very much like, all right, just give us a story and don't ask questions. I didn't want to do that because we're in a pandemic and we already don't see anyone or talk to anyone. Really? So it's like, we got on a Zoom group call and we, you know, saw each other's faces, and I really liked that. And
yeah,
we just went for it too. We just invited some authors we weren't sure, like we'd never spoken to, but we're like, hey, this would be a great person to have on board. And they said yes. So I don't know. There's just a lot to be learned there. And I think that your management of it helped a lot because you're so organized.
Some people call that OCD. Okay. But yes, I do love organizing things, especially other people's things. So if I looked at the project as someone else's project, I was just up to my elbows in it. And it was fantastic. Yeah, definitely. Mm-hmm.
Well, okay, so I'm gonna brag about you a little bit because you have used that organizational skill and that discipline to launch your series really well. So tell us a little bit about the Mitzi Moon books and how you decided to start and what are some of the things you've done and how has it worked out for you?
Okay, sure. I had been a dyed-in-the-wool, I will never write to market. And then I was like, you know, I would sort of like to sell some books, just in a crazy idea. And so I really struggled with it for a while. I read Chris Fox's book. I did a lot of research. You know, I talked to you, talked to Brian, and kind of got all my ducks in a row. And I thought, okay, if I'm going to do this, I'm still going to do it with my idea, with my flair, with my thing that I feel passionate about, so that I don't just write a couple of books and then go, ugh, I hate it, you know? So I went into the paranormal cozy mystery because I love all things paranormal. That's just kind of my thing. I mean, we're in my favorite time of the year right now. My house is just a nut show. I've got like little lasers on the side of the house, pumpkins and whatever. Anyway, so I'm really into all of that stuff. And I wanted to do something that was paranormal, but not totally witchy. So I went with the psychic thing, you know, and it just kind of got into my groove and figured out my characters and where things were going to go. And then I added on top of that, I added the rapid release idea for the first three books. So I wrote them before I published anything, you know, trying to exercise patience, which is super difficult for me. And I also went with the idea of farming out things rather than trying to do everything myself, to farm some things out, to use a virtual assistant, to use our team manager, you know, things like that, so that I could really focus on stories and really get myself into a solid daily writing rhythm and not make it about if I feel like it or if I don't feel like it. So I set up my launch schedule for a year in advance. And I put in all of the steps. So this is again where the organization comes in. All of the steps. When do I have to have it to the beta team? When do I have to have it to the art team? When do I have to have it to my editor? When does it go up on BookFunnel? When does it do that? All of these different steps. And just held my own feet to the fire and made sure I hit every one of those deadlines. So the launch of the next book kind of became the marketing strategy in a way, where it's like, I'm making sure that when I have book one ready to go to the publisher, I've got the excerpt of book two in the back. I've got the pre-order for book two up on, you know, and so it was just like this daisy chain kind of effect. And it worked really great. Every single book that has launched has had more pre-orders than the one before it. Every time the book releases, the page reads ratchet up another notch. And so the sticking point is a little bit higher. And so it's been a very slow build. It wasn't like, boom, overnight, I sold a million books. You know, it's just ratcheting up with each release. But I'm still enjoying writing it. I'm still getting positive feedback from readers. So overall, it seemed like a sustainable strategy so far. I am releasing fewer books next year, though.
Right. Yeah. No, that makes sense. I mean, rapid release is exhausting, but I'm going to ask you this. You don't have to answer, but just for posterity's sake, about how long was it from when you started writing these series to when you saw a month with profit on the series?
Honestly, the first book, right out of the gate, I mean, it hit the tropes. It resonated with readers, and I sold more books that launch week of that series than I had in like the previous 3 months of my other genre backlist stuff, other pen name stuff, you know? So it was just like, oh, this is working. Yeah, it was amazing. So yeah, I mean, month one, and that's not, you know, it's not an overnight success story. Obviously writing for years under other pen name and not getting it done. So a huge learning curve to get to that point and to put all of the pieces in place, but it definitely clicked and it hasn't stopped.
Yeah, I think Brian would be very proud of you, right? I know he is proud of you, but I think right now he would say he's proud of you for writing to market and having a strategy and actually hitting the tropes and all that. So I think it's great.
I think the thing about writing to market that puts people off is they feel like they're going to have to write something they're not interested in or write something that doesn't resonate with them. But that's not the case. You can take the tropes and the expectations of that audience in that genre, that market, and you can fit it into what you enjoy and feel and put your own twist on it. I mean, if it's not original, it's not going to resonate with people anyway. People are always looking for something new, for a new twist, for a new take. You know, you see all these different shows that reboot this and that and the other thing. And so it does resonate with people, and you can find the things that nurture you as a writer and make it interesting for you. And you're not just regurgitating. That does not appeal to me at all. I couldn't stand that. I wouldn't be able to keep up any kind of writing schedule if I felt stifled like that.
That will burn you out very quickly. I like to think of it as being a good conversationalist. Like, you talk with the other person in mind of what they might want to hear, what interests them, but you don't ever have to talk about stuff you don't want to talk about.
Right.
And you can still carry on a very lively conversation that way.
Yeah, that's a good way to put it. Definitely.
Well, thank you for enlightening us with that. I was very excited to hear how you've done, because this is basically, you're like a case study for exactly what should be done.
And I kind of am. I do feel a little bit like that.
And you're having great success. So
yeah, I mean, to be perfectly honest, because I know this is a very writer heavy audience, to go from making a couple hundred dollars a month to looking at September as my first five-figure month in a year. Wow. So, you know, many years of struggling and flopping and failing and wanting to give up. And shout out to Derek Murphy, who sent me the most lovely, encouraging video 18 months ago, or maybe it was almost 2 years ago now, when I was ready to just throw in the towel. And he's like, hey, here's some ideas. And, you know, it wasn't even what he said. It was just the fact that he took the time to do that. So I think paying it forward and sharing the knowledge with people, that's what it's all about. You know, the pie is big enough for everyone. There's not just one pie.
Absolutely. There's not just one pie. There are lots of pies. Oh, well, bless Derek for that. That's so sweet. We are going to change gears a little bit. And since Brian could not be here today, he so wanted to tell people about something that he's working on. And so he left us a little audio clip to play.
Hey there, it's Brian. Obviously, I'm not co-hosting the show today. I'm actually getting ready to do a webinar for my 5-day Amazon ad profit challenge. And so when the show goes live, the course, Amazon Ad School, will be back open to the public, about $100 off coupon from what it's usually priced at. And I am just super excited. We always have this big influx of new students from the challenge. And usually what we do with that is that we rerun a lot of our existing content live so that everybody gets the chance to ask us questions. Everybody gets the chance to take on things like running international ads, learning more about the new KENP tracking feature in the Amazon ad dashboard, how to bid lower and to get a better profit, or how to use a strong ROI and scale that up. These are all things that we go into in Amazon Ad School. And if you are interested in getting involved in that, in working with me and my team on your ads, adschool2020.com. The offer is available through October 26th. So that is Monday, October 26th. So if you are interested in getting a discount and getting the opportunity to ask as many questions as you want on Amazon advertising, with getting answers from an expert and a team of experts, adschool2020.com. Back to the show. Claire, Trixie, take it away.
Thanks, Brian. The winner of How to Write a Sizzling Synopsis, that's the prize for this week's winner, is Matthew Herman. Congratulations, Matthew. Send Brian a message and we will get you hooked up with that. All right. This week's featured patrons. Number one, we have The Efficient Writer by Sarah Rosette. Having trouble finding time to write? Discover the trick behind accomplishing more writing in less time. Rosette's simple but effective book can save you precious minutes each day. As the minutes add up to hours, you'll be able to spend more time on what you love most, writing. Buy Rosette's book now, and you'll get a helpful guide with over 50 resources, templates, checklists, and spreadsheets. And that's The Efficient Writer by Sarah Rosette. I was recently on her podcast. It's a really great one. People should check out. We talked about what we wish we knew starting out.
Oh gosh. Yeah.
She hosts it with Jamie Albright. It's a great podcast. Very smart individual. So you should check out The Efficient Writer. All right, over to you, Trixie.
Another of our patrons today is Steve Shockley with the Life Action Book, Tools and Actions for Personal Development. Struggling to identify your greatest strengths and opportunities? Discover a powerful collection of tools and techniques to find your perfect path. The Life Action Book is a thorough collection of personal development techniques that will make you fly higher than ever before. If you like straight-to-the-point guidance, practical techniques, and a robust catalog of self-improvement topics, then you'll love Steve Alvest's comprehensive resource.
And then our third patron this week is Liberty Spidel. Her book is The Darby Shaw Chronicles Box Set. One call could change her life forever. It's not every day you discover you have superpowers. The only problem? Darby Shaw's particular brand has never been seen before, and the agency in charge of monitoring superhumans have her in their sights. If you enjoy futuristic thrills of J.D. Robb's world or the Marvel Cinematic Universe, the Darby Shaw Chronicles box set is for you. For those listening, if you like this show and want to support us, you can go to our Patreon. That's at patreon.com/SMBS. And I just noticed we're getting very close to hitting one of our pledge goals. And when we do, Brian and I will do a live show y'all can jump on. I don't know if it's going to be like dating advice. I don't know what we're going to be doing live with people jumping on. It should be dating advice.
Please make it that.
It should be two like married homebodies giving dating advice during a pandemic. But perfect. I think it'll probably be book selling related.
All right.
So yeah, you can go support us. We really appreciate it. Your book can be featured and we will try to roast it as best we can.
Excellent.
All right. So let's look at last week's question of the week. That was, what part of your automated marketing or online presence might benefit from adding a little human touch to it? Trixie, I'll let you read that first one.
Ethan Jones said, I'm working on making my weekly newsletters sound more personal. Keep up the awesome work with the show. Not me particularly, but Brian and Claire, good job.
Dylan Crush said, good question. I've been trying to find a way to connect more with my readers. I try to keep track of birthdays so I can send out a quick, unexpected shout out, but need to figure out a better way to collect the data from my readers, especially the ones who have been on my list for a while. I love that. Mm-hmm. Sounds like a lot of admin work, but It sounds like it'll pay off. People are pretty special.
Exactly. Anne Marie said, this is a good question of the week. I need to check in with my email list of readers on how they're doing instead of always being in the mindset of sending something or create an online event where we can all interact. There are also two groups on Facebook. I need to make more of an effort to be in there regularly and start some discussions. It's good.
I know. It's amazing how far video can go. Just a live video to your peeps.
Yeah.
Have you done any of that recently?
I did one, not for my particular page, but I did a live video on a blogger's page and it was pretty fun. I hadn't done a Facebook Live before, so you can go ahead and skip the first minute of me looking at the screen going, is it on? Is it live? Is it working?
That is truly my favorite part of any.
I expected some kind of feedback and there was just nothing. It was just me talking.
It's become part of how it works, you know. It's like part of our culture now is anytime you get on any sort of like Instagram Live or Facebook Live, you're just like, yep, I'm gonna see like this very real part of this person struggling with technology.
Yeah, no, it was so sad, but it was fun. I mean, then when I figured out how to scroll and see the comments, and I was like, oh, this is very exciting.
That's awesome. Yes, I definitely recommend people try that and don't worry about fumbling for the first minute.
It's totally a thing.
Yeah. It's part of it. All right. Well, let's move on into the tips of the week.
And now on the Sell More Book Show, it's the tip of the week.
Release the notifications. Looking for another way to let your readers know you've got a book coming? Draft to Digital's release notifications provide a fully automated mailing list signup and notification system for authors who publish through Draft to Digital. When enabled on your book, D2D automatically creates a store-specific embedded signup page in the back of your book. Then, when an author's pre-order becomes available or a book goes live through Draft to Digital, readers who've signed up for notifications will receive an email letting them know it's available on their favorite store. D2D will even send store-specific emails based on the user's preference.
Now, would you use this instead of building your email list?
I feel a little possessive of my email list, so I kind of want that to be my information. But I mean, I'm not against having another source to notify them. But if I'm not getting those emails and they're just getting the emails, I don't know that I'm feeling a little bit of resistance to that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I would say that this is good supplemental notifications for people, but you still want to get them on your list. Mm-hmm. I know you do a lot with BookBub, right?
Yeah, I have found that to be pretty fantastic. I didn't realize the power of it, but you often hear people talk about the seven touches or whatever, you know, kind of thing. Mm-hmm. And it is nice for readers to be having me thrown in front of their face, not by me. So yeah, my email goes out. Yeah, I announce that, or I check in with them about this or that. But it's also nice for them to get an email from BookBub going, hey, this author that you follow has a book coming out. Woohoo. So someone else is tooting my horn, which I'm all about that.
Right. It does add this strange, inexplicable sense of legitimacy when it's like a notification that, you know, Nelson has just released another book, right above a notification. Jim Butcher has just released another book. And you're like, oh man, BookBub really, you know, equates these two. It's just sort of like cognitive bias we have. But yeah, it is a nice extra touch.
Yeah.
So adding Draft to Digital would be great if you're wide and you publish through Draft to Digital. I guess I don't know if they distribute to just Amazon. I don't know why you wouldn't go direct if you were Amazon exclusive, but
if you were one of the things that would be a detriment to that is if you go through a third party publisher and you only are in Amazon, it takes away your ability to do certain types of promotions because you're coming in through this third party versus direct. So with Amazon, if you want to be able to take advantage of the reasons why people go exclusive, then you would just publish through Amazon. But for wide, I think it's great to be able to use some of these aggregators that have so many great services and great relationships with Kobo and, you know, these other places where you can get additional touches.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, you always have to weigh control versus what you have time for. And I think I love Draft to Digital. I mean, I like the people who work there. They're great. They care a lot about authors. They are authors. So yeah, I think this is a great option, especially if you're going wide. You can even just like upload to the main channels independently and then distribute through Draft to Digital to a bunch of other channels that you don't want to have to individually upload to, you know, smaller channels and that sort of thing. Because every stream of income is a good stream of income.
Absolutely. Yeah.
I will definitely be checking this out.
Mm-hmm. Nice. Our next tip is brand building basics. And that's a nice little tongue twister. It's hard to stand out as an author these days, writes author T.R. Robinson. In the modern book world, having your own brand is something authors should consider. Brand creates awareness and recognition, informing one's audience and differentiating them. Branding is the author's promise to their fans, says Robinson. So it's important to know the reader you're trying to attract. The tone, image, and messaging all depend on knowing your ideal audience. When hearing the word brand, many think of logos such as Nike or Starbucks, but a brand is more than a logo. Other elements of a brand are colors, image, style, website, and even taglines. Authors can build their brand in stages rather than one mad rush, as effective branding takes time. Anything the author builds will form part of their public brand, so thinking ahead will help guide it over time.
This is such an interesting, I mean, this is like a big topic, right? Mm-hmm. Branding is a big topic, but I think it's good to go back to the basics. So what stands out about this to you?
Well, I think not having to build it all in one mad rush. Because I think sometimes people look at it and go, oh my gosh, it's just too much. I've got to redo my whole email automation sequence and I've got to do my website. And, you know, it just feels like it's too much and it's insurmountable. So I'm never going to do it. But instead, he's kind of recommending taking it a step at a time, add this, add that, build, but keep your end goal in mind. So I think that's a beneficial way to look at it. So you can just take on bite-sized pieces and eventually you have everything cohesive.
Right. I think the gag is kind of like the writer who has like this perfect branding. Everything looks so good. You know, they spent months on it and you go, okay, so where's the book?
Yeah, that's such a good point.
Yeah, it happens. It happens. This is a different part of your brain you're using generally. Yeah,
exactly.
And sometimes that part of the brain is firing on all cylinders when that writing part of the brain is a little bit like, you know, hitting resistance for whatever reason.
Yeah. It's a great procrastination. I'm going to go work on my branding.
Oh, I love it. Lose myself in my website, please.
That's a good thing to outsource. That's a wonderful thing to outsource. mm-hmm. artists on Fiverr and virtual assistants and whatever. That's a nice thing to take off your plate so you can focus on writing.
Right. Those little bits can really suck you in. I do also love the part where it's like, you can build as you go, right? Like if you're going to look at the 80-20, you know, distribution of where your energy matters, it's writing the book. As long as you're writing a book and you can just send an email to people that says, hey, here's the link to the book. And that's better than like not having a book. You know, even if
yeah, better than not having a book.
No clear branding, you know. I mean, if you want to take some time and be thoughtful about it ahead of time, like, you know, you have the book and you're like, okay, I'm not gonna launch right away. You know, I'm gonna actually like build up a launch and build up a brand. That's cool too, if you want to be thoughtful about it. But yeah, it doesn't have to be all at once.
Yeah, definitely.
And you can change directions at any time. If you're like, nope, this branding. I mean, I don't know how many times I've redesigned my Age Claire Taylor website. It's just like, nope, that's, I don't like that anymore. We're changing all that. Whatever. It's not a big deal. Who cares? So the brand does extend beyond, like it says, the taglines and the logos and all that. It's you.
Yeah.
Right? And this really great line is in this blog post is talking about a brand is something like a promise you're making to the reader about what you're going to deliver to them.
Yeah.
I think that's a really good way of thinking of it. Do you want to read number three?
Oh, yes. Review these myths. Authors want reviews. So it's natural to ask your friends for advice, says Sandra Beckwith for Build Book Buzz. But one downside to asking other authors could be bad advice. While there are some unwritten rules, most are documented, yet myths persist. Not being allowed to give books in exchange for reviews, for instance. Yes, Amazon no longer allows sellers to give free products for reviews, but books are an exception. Myth number two is that anyone can review a book on Amazon, but the documentation is clear that reviewers must have spent at least $50 on Amazon.com over the past 12 months. Myth number three is that readers can't review unless they bought the book on Amazon, but reviews, verified or not, are allowed by Amazon's guidelines. Only once you're clear on what is and isn't a myth should you start seeking reviews, suggests Beckwith. See her post for links to the rules and some ideas on finding reviewers.
Great. Thank you for reading all those tips. What would you have to say about these three myths? Have you run into them?
Yeah, I know when they made the change about not giving products for reviews, there was like a K-boards H-bomb because people just jump on bandwagons and don't do their own research. I think it is important to know the facts and to try to operate within the guidelines as much as possible. And it's great to have a lot of verified reviews, but the fact of the matter is people can leave reviews on anything they want, whenever they want, whether they bought it or not. And that's just life. And, you know, if some people buy on other platforms and review on Amazon, I don't know, whatever. It does happen.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. The one that I have run into the most with my advanced reader team is myth number two, that anyone can review a book, but you do need to spend, the reviewer does have to have spent $50 in the last 12 months on Amazon, which I don't think that's going to be so much of a problem for people now.
Right.
Amazon.
Yes.
But it can be really confusing. There are a lot of people who are like, well, I left my review, but I don't see it. And it's like, well, you know, if your review team is made up of people who only get books through review teams, free books through review teams,
right.
Then their reviews aren't going to show up. So I think specifying that on the like application or whatever you do for your advanced readers, your review team is very important.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, definitely. I think people just sometimes don't understand that and then they don't know why things aren't working. But I think that's good. And also just a complete side note, I don't know what this just popped into my head, but some people cannot figure out how to get their review link to show, you know, like if they're on a reader team and they have to show that they posted their review. Apparently that is more difficult than it sounds.
That is. And the quick fix that I did, and probably you've done the same thing, is you take a screen recording of you going and getting a link to a review you've left.
Yep.
And you say, watch this, and you talk them through it. And the video takes 5 minutes to create once you get that screen share, you know, recording software on your computer. And then, and you can do it. I think I did mine in QuickTime or something. And then you just send it to them and you save yourself a huge headache.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, exactly.
I do want to circle back to what you said about people freaking out on K-boards. Guys, the sky is not falling. Mm-hmm. It might fall, but it's probably not.
But it's probably not. But it is probably not falling. I know. Go ahead, go outside, look up, at the sky yourself.
Well, and also ask yourself if every time Amazon changes anything with their policies, it makes you run around like your shoes are on fire. Maybe you have a little too many eggs in a single basket.
Yeah, that is true.
I mean, you know, just something to think about. I'm not saying going to tell you what is best for your platform, but just something to think about.
Yes, exactly. Breathe.
All right. Well, shall we jump into the top five news of the week?
Absolutely.
Are you ready for breaking news?
So ready for breaking news. I'm so ready for it.
It's time for the Sell More Book Show Top 5 News. Number 5.
Creating a problem. Amazon's recently updated Kindle Create formatting tool is taking flack for creating bloated book files. Author Tanya Chris discovered the problem when she tried to lower her book to 99 cents for a sale, only to find the file size of her book was too big to allow it. When she looked deeper, she found her other books were also large and generating huge delivery fees, often as high as 98 cents per download. After some testing, Chris found that by uploading her DocX files directly, she was able to reduce the sizes dramatically. The book that they'd been charging 98 cents per download dropped to just 17 cents by uploading a Word document instead of using Kindle Create. Chris says that many authors don't look at the file size, but if you've been using Kindle Create, check your delivery costs. So we mentioned Kindle Create, I think, last week. Both Brian and I were kind of reserving our judgment on it. And I don't know about you, Trixie, but I kind of went into a cold sweat at this 98 cent per download delivery fee.
Yeah. Wow. I don't know. That would flip me out. I mean, I was flipping out over 7 cents. I'm like, wait, what?
What are my 7 cents going to?
But I seldom use those types of services. Like, I have way too much OCD to put that in someone else's hands. I want it to look a certain way. I want it to page breaks to be in a certain place. I want, you know, I'm just like very much about having the control. So I'm a dyed-in-the-wool vellum user,
and oh yeah,
there's no way I'm ever going back. I worship at the altar of vellum. I love those guys.
Yet another episode that is not sponsored by vellum, but sounds like it is.
But sounds like it is. When you're good, you're good.
Yeah. For reference for people who don't use it, my files usually are like the size of them usually cost me anywhere from 7 to 10 cents per download, depending on how long the book is, how many chapter headings it has and that sort of thing. So 98 cents per download is like, oh, I need to take a Tums.
Yeah, that is definitely some bloat, some massive bloat.
Even 17 cents by uploading a Word document. I know that doesn't seem like much, you know, if it's like a 10 cent difference. Mm-hmm. And I don't know how big these books are, you know, it might be a little more if it's like a box set, but a 10 cent difference when you're selling well, 10 cents per book does add up. So checking those file sizes, huge.
So it has a no pun intended.
Yeah. Because you never know. You never know what weird thing. You're like, oh, this is just a standard thing. And then maybe you have like, if you add a couple book covers in the back, that's going to be a little extra, which I do because I think it's worth it to have the book next book in series. I don't know if you do that.
I do. Yeah.
Yeah. Just, yeah. It's like, oh, here's a thing. I'm going to catch your eye and you click on this. That's worth a cent to me. I don't know what it comes out to if it's 1 cent or, you know, point something cents, but that's worth it to me. So yeah,
it is. Yeah.
Check your file size. Moving on.
Number 4.
Thanks, Google. Authors are used to getting less, but in October, Google Play actually started paying authors more. In a recent post in the Google Play Books Partner Help Center, Google wrote, "We are increasing your revenue split to 70% of the list price on ebook sales of Google Play Books to end users. They list over 70 countries, including the United States, Canada, UK, Germany, and Australia. Previous to October, royalties were set at only 52%. With the exception of the United States, Canada, and Australia, which had a 70% royalty rate if the books were priced within specific price bands. Thanks to Summer S. Wilson for the tip."
Woohoo! A little bit of good news, huh?
Yeah, exactly.
And in Germany, which makes me very excited. Yeah. You are Kindle exclusive, right? With your cozy space.
Yep, I am right now. And I'm kind of just monitoring things. And I think we talked about this, you know, when I see page reads starting to taper and or drop kind of thing, then I'll consider wide. But for now, it's working for me. And I know all my eggs in one basket, but, you know, that's what's happening.
Sometimes it's a good basket.
Yeah, it's a good basket right now.
The series that I have wide, I don't have it up on Google Play because I had so many issues with it. But now I'm like, yeah, maybe I'll put it back up on Google.
Maybe give it a shot.
Maybe it's worth having to like figure out how to log in to Google. Like I had problems logging into Google Play each time. And I was just like, no, we're not doing this. Mm-hmm. But yeah, 70%, that's great. And you know, if your books are already on Google Play, you're just suddenly going to get more money. So
more money.
All right.
Number three.
Tis the season to wait. Is the holiday season a good time to launch your book? No, says book marketer Carrie Ray Burnham. Quote, I understand the temptation to go to print as soon as you're ready, says Barnum, writing for joelfrelander.com. But, quote, publishing a book at the end of the year may hurt more than help you. Barnum does make exceptions for holiday-themed books, like those likely to sell as gifts, time-sensitive information, and books tied to historical events. Book sales can be slow during the holidays, and books launched in November will already seem a year old in 2021 to many readers. Unless publishing after October 15th of any year is strategic, Barnum urges authors to wait. Quote, publish your book in January or even March and give yourself the gift of time to plan, market, and to succeed. Okay, so this one I actually am very interested in your opinion. Okay. I mean, I value your opinion on all of them, but on this one, what do you think about this?
First of all, the thought of not publishing a book from October to March makes me laugh so hard because I published 11 books since last October. So skipping like 6 months out of the year is just like a traditional publishing. But so that doesn't resonate with me. I do understand the concept in principle. However, that wouldn't work for me. That's not my strategy. And I think it does probably make a difference what genre you're in. That can definitely do things. And she does make the exception for holiday themed books, which are incredibly popular in the cozy and paranormal cozy genres, to tie things into Halloween, Thanksgiving, Christmas, you know, that sort of thing. So I think it really depends on your genre and your historical readership. You know, you can look at that for yourself and see how things are working. It can be a fantastic time to publish if your books are good gift kind of things. I think paperback sales, I've noticed even with other series that weren't selling as well as the current one, paperback sales go up this time of year because people want a physical gift to give to someone, you know? So that, yeah, the other side of the coin.
Right. Yeah. So I see what she's saying, right? Like if you publish a book, and this year we also have election season adding to the holiday season in the US. So there's a lot of distraction. So if you were to publish the same book, say you could do this, you know, two different timelines. You publish it in November versus publishing it in January, February, mm-hmm. You're probably going to see more sales initially on it, or at least get a better ROI when you do it in January, February versus November, probably. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. But to your point, you have momentum.
Yeah.
So if you're listening to this and you have momentum, you've been doing, you know, a book every 2 months, or your readership is just really rabid and ready for whatever you have to give them when you give it to them, there's no need to stop that momentum. Like don't bring it to a screeching halt, but it may mm-hmm. not be what I'm thinking is it may not be the best time to start a series. So for me, yeah, I have a book three in one series, a book four in another series that I'm going to publish before the end of the year. Mm-hmm. Because like it's book three in one series, but it's a spinoff series. So I already have, you know, readers from right. that series. Readers I have my list. Yeah. They'll buy it. I know that. A book mm-hmm. four, I just need to get that out. I have a list for that too. And I think people will buy it and it's wide. Mm-hmm. So I don't care so much about momentum. Mm-hmm. Just once I get book four out, then I can market it. But then I also have two series that I'm about to start. So one is a brand new pen name and one is an existing pen name, but a new series. And those I'm 100% taking her advice on.
Yeah,
I'm not punching this.
I agree. Yeah. Yeah.
So I think it depends a lot on momentum, right?
Yeah, definitely. I wouldn't want to start a new series now because there is a lot of noise. There's a lot of, you know, people have a lot of things going on, holidays, holiday shopping, holiday promotions, all, and like you said, the election, you know, everything. I have a book 10 and 11 still that are going to publish this year. I wouldn't put the brakes on that for anything. Keep the bullet train going.
Right. Yeah. So you don't need to deprive yourself, I think, is, you know, if you know that it's going to work, your sales may be a little lower, but a little lower versus none or dying out and losing momentum, I would take a little lower any day and just plan for, you know, quarter four to be a low sales quarter. But it may not be. You never know. I mean, honestly, the two highest months I've ever had were a December and a January. So
yeah,
those were very high sales months and it was great. So I like December and January a lot. All right. Anything else on this one?
I don't think so.
All right. Then we will move on to number two. And I believe that is to you.
Number two.
No small change. Changing your ebook title to test conversion rates used to be easy, but not anymore. Amazon just changed the rules, adding title to the list of items that can no longer be changed without publishing a new edition. If you make changes to your main title and or author name after publication, your ebook will be considered as a new book. You will need to upload a new submission, they state on their updated help page. In addition, they now require a previously published as disclaimer at the top of the description field if the title or author name are changed significantly. Changing both the title and author name is not allowed. While this change is new for ebooks, the rule has always been in place for paperbacks.
Okay. So, I mean, this is probably going to affect a very small number of people who decide to change the names.
Yeah. Yeah.
Have you ever tried that?
No. I mean, I did republish a series, but I have been a proponent of owning my ISBNs since I set up my publishing company. So I've never been this like, hey, I'm just going to throw my book up here or there and they can just assign whatever ISBN they want and I release control. I'm a control freak. That doesn't work for me. So when I republished my series and changed the title for book one, had a new ISBN number and, you know, all of that stuff. So it was very organized and I have never gone in and just randomly changed the titles of books for any reason, conversion, you know, rates, whatever. I've changed blurbs, you know, best page forward style, but I have not done anything with titles and stuff. That just doesn't, I don't know. That doesn't sit well with me, but
yeah, I mean, you can try an A/B test with it or you could, now you can. I have played around with subtitles, but as far as titles go, once I pick it, it's pretty much it. And I have not been super great about like being, I've not been super strategic with my titles in the past. It's usually like, oh, this is funny. Let me make sure no one in my genre is published being called this. Or it's like my Killhaven Police series. It's, I think I may have come up with a series just because I wanted titles like Shift Out of Luck and Same Old Shift and Deep Shift and stuff like that. Like it's, they're pun titles. And I'm like, it's not the best for marketing, but like I've dug my heels in on those right? when you write the book around it or cozy mystery. Let's be real. A lot of our plots come from just cute titles we think of.
100%. Yes. 100%. That is the seed of all.
Right. I'm like, okay, now what book do I write around Queso de los Muertos? You know? So yeah, it's usually go title first into things, but it is good to note that you can't change it. So
I gave my main character an obsession with French fries solely so that I could title book one Fries and Alibis.
There
I
you
could,
go.
Couldn't stop myself.
And so the, you know, the curtain is pulled back on the creative mind.
Yes. Yes. Oh, spoiler alert.
It's like people think we're, you know, over here just acting like beautiful mind kind of thing, you know, but it's like, no, I thought it was a really funny title.
I'm giggling like a fourth grader.
Right. I guess I've got to give my main character this very specific attribute so that I can write a book with this title.
Yeah, it's all true.
All right. Let's go to that top story of the week. Ooh, top story. I can't wait to talk about this one.
And now the number one top five news item.
Write, market, and be healthy. There's never been a better or more stressful time to be a writer. Quote, part of living in the now is being on all the time, says Rachel Thompson for AnnRAllen.com. Between our devices, social media, work, and the news, it can be hard to stay focused. But with a few techniques and tools, you can write, market, and be healthy. Start with time management tools like Buffer or Hootsuite for social media management, which can not only schedule your posts, but shield you from getting sucked in. Then turn off your notifications, if not permanently, at least when writing. Finally, one of the most important aspects of keeping yourself healthy is giving yourself permission for self-care time. Self-care might feel like running away, but time spent taking care of yourself will be paid back with better work. Oof.
Yeah. All right.
So, since you get so much done and you're so productive, I'm sure you have some great tips along these lines. So tell us about them.
Well, I actually do use Hootsuite. I find social media not so much distracting as just depressing. So the less time I spend in front of it, the better I feel personally and the better my energy is to go into my writing. So I take a couple of Sunday afternoons a month and I schedule out everything for the next couple of weeks. And I, you know, plan out my promotions, book launches, whatever. I have all of that in the mix of things and try to just really be efficient that way. I also use a virtual assistant to manage my Facebook group. And I jump in there every once in a while, but I really, really try to limit my time. And I do not have any notifications turned on. It drives me insane. So I have to have all of that off. And when I write, I turn my phone off because it rings, or if a text pings or something, I'm just like Pavlov's dog. I have to know, you know? So yeah, I just have to turn all of that off and just kind of set up my day in blocks. So I do this thing with email, you know, then I can do this thing, then I write, then I take my break, then I do my editing, then whatever, so that I just have pieces of focus. And I'm terrible with self-care, so maybe you should talk about that.
Yeah. Oh yeah, I'm the queen of self-care. No, I mean, so my self-care is very much maintenance. I don't know that I'm like the best person to talk about it, but I do journaling and meditation. Hero is a big self-care thing. And then of course I take my quarterly weeks off.
Yes.
It's so good. I'm like getting a little bit too comfortable with them. And I'm like, maybe I'll just take a week off like midway through the quarter. Maybe I should just retire. But yeah, I mean, the notifications thing, I don't know if you feel this way, but as soon as I hear a notification on my phone, even if I'm like, I'm not going to get that, it's like the moment it starts, it's like there's a bungee cord that connects me to my phone. And the longer I wait, it's not like I'm going to forget about it. It's just that bungee cord being pulled tighter and tighter and tighter. And it's just like costing me more and more to resist over time.
Yes.
So yeah, getting that out of there was like, ugh, so nice. Like it's, you're like, oh, but everyone's outside. No, like the real world's here. The real world is here. So it's time to go into your pretend world and write a book.
Into your pretend world. Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, this is so good. And I love how you talk about batching your social media. Because this post also talks about that.
Yeah.
So you use Sundays for that?
I do. I do that kind of in the afternoon. I do meal prepping and other tasks that aren't my favorite on that day. But when I put myself in the headspace of social media, then I can get into it. And I write my posts and I feel kind of engaged, whatever. But if I had to go into that headspace every day, I would freak out. I wouldn't be able to write anything because it sucks energy away from me. I don't know.
Well, the transitions, I think people overlook the transition that it takes mental energy to go from social media to writing and all that. And I do want to point out meal prep for the week counts as self-care.
Mm-hmm. Okay. All right. Thank you. Then I do that. Nailing it. But it's just another, like, I just don't want to have to cook every day and dishes. And I just want to do it once. I just literally make, you know, 30 meals one day, 4 hours, done. handled.
That's very disciplined of you. I mean, I think that's part of it is like planning ahead. One of the things that I've learned since being self-employed is that I make much better decisions for future me than I ever do for present me.
Oh, yeah.
So that is, it's like, no, I'm going to take care of future me by getting, you know, getting stuff together, batching social media, scheduling promotions so that when present me gets to that date on, you know, look at my calendar that day, I'm like, oh, I don't want to do it, but it's already there. All right. Okay. Well, that wraps it up for our news this week. We need to come up with a question of the week.
All right.
What's something you could schedule or batch schedule?
Mm-hmm.
That would help free up some mental space for writing?
Yes.
I love it. Okay. Okay. Well, anything you got going on? Any upcoming releases you're getting ready for?
I have book 10 releasing on November 17th.
What's that one called?
Lies and Pumpkin Pies.
Lies. So it is holiday themed.
It is holiday themed. Yes. Those pumpkin pies. Wink. Yeah. So that's the next fun one coming up.
Sounds delicious. I love pumpkin pie more than just about anything. All right. Well, I don't really have anything going on this week. You can still find all of the offerings I have. I still have that free course. People are still jumping into the Indie Author Alignment 5-day foundation course. It's really fun. You leave comments. I'll give you some feedback and we'll help get you aligned to maximize your energy. And then obviously my story alignment services there. You can find all of that at ffs.media, FFF, Frank Susan. That's what it stands for, .media. Thank you so much for joining us this week, or joining me, Brian Spirit, RIP. But
our anthology, Cold Cases and Haunted Places, is...
Our anthology, Cold Cases and Haunted Places.
Last week it'll be 99¢. Get out there, people.
Yeah, true. And this is another book that we thought of the title first, right?
It is so true. But it works. All of those 14 stories just fall under that umbrella so beautifully. Mm-hmm. I mean,
it was a fun one to work on.
It was, absolutely.
Maybe any paranormal cozy mystery authors out there who are listening to this should hit us up for a possible future anthology.
Absolutely.
All right. Well, thanks to everyone for hanging out with us and listening to this week's episode number 342. And I hope that you guys will join us next week. Brian will be back. I'll make sure of it. And we will see you for episode 343.
Thanks for listening to the Sell More Book Show. Visit the website at www.sellmorebookshow.com for detailed show notes and subscription information, or to send us news or comments for use on the show. Also, please take a moment to subscribe to the show and leave us a review. Thank you very much for listening, and happy bookselling!